Zach, you can do anything. I mean, you're gorgeous, you're smart, everybody loved him.
Eddie was kind and creative and funny. They fell in love during Hurricane Katrina.
She loved Zach, but he was very jealous. He told her, if I can't have you, nobody else will.
He had to be insane.
That's graveyard love.
I was getting ready to go get something to eat. A broadcast came across the radio, suicide call. The coroner's office investigator started to try to identify him by means of going through his pockets and come across a clear plastic Ziploc baggie with a white folded up piece of paper and some military dog tags. The dog tags had his name was Zach Bowen. The folded up piece of loose leaf paper had "for police only" written on it. Started reading the note. I had to take my life for the life I took. It said how he had taken the life of his girlfriend, and he gave the address. Went directly to the address. When you see something like that, it gives you a really uneasy feeling. It's definitely one of the most disturbing scenes I've been on, if not the most disturbing.
It was horrible. It was unreal. I mean, you wouldn't believe a person would do something like that to another human being.
It still doesn't make any sense to me. How a person can go from being this jovial, wonderful person that everyone loves to this, what they called him here was the Butcher of New Orleans.
It's the summer of 1995. Teenager Zach Bowen takes off with his dad on a road trip across America.
He had this knockout personality. He was charming. He was extremely funny, very sure of himself.
They end up in New Orleans. His dad moves on, but Zach stays. Handsome and charismatic, he soon lands a job in a bar. That's where he meets Lana, a dancer from Texas.
He was gregarious and funny and happy-go-lucky and easygoing and fun. The relationship developed very quickly. We quickly had feelings for each other. I suddenly found myself pregnant.
Zach, meanwhile, has conveniently neglected to tell Lana how old he is.
I found out he was 17. I was 27 at the time. So I broke up with him. I was going to have the child. He could be in the child's life or he didn't have to. I wasn't going to chase him down for anything because I felt that I couldn't force a child upon him that he possibly was not ready for. But he wanted us to be a family. And he asked me to marry him.
And I thought, oh my God, Zach, you're 19 years old and she's 28. And I cried and cried and cried.
And I accepted. We were very happy, very much in love. You could see the love in our eyes. We loved each other.
I thought, oh God, this isn't what I wanted for Zach. And I knew that's not what he wanted to do. That was never Zach's plan. He wanted to be an English teacher.
A second child comes along. Another mouth to feed. Zach needs money and a job, fast. He joins the army and gets shipped off to Iraq. Military life is tough on Zach.
The environment is hostile. They all want to kill you. And when you see the death of someone that you eat, sleep, shower, everything, you go through a whirlpool of emotions that are at times impossible to control. I know it upset Zach.
Zach came back damaged. Something was wrong. He was just different, like emotionless. There were no feelings there about anything. And he wouldn't talk to me about it. We split up because he wasn't the man that I married. He wasn't the man I fell in love with.
It was a long time before I really knew that they were split up. I think he felt so bad about it, he didn't want to tell me.
I believe Zach internally, he took anything that didn't work out in his life as a total personal failure.
Now 27 and separated from Lana, Zach reinvents himself as the carefree, no-strings-attached guy he was when he first came to New Orleans.
Zach has been back in New Orleans maybe 6 months, and he gets a graveyard shift in a bar in the French Quarter. He was doing things like magic tricks for customers. Women loved him. And he was just, you know, a magnetic person.
You can do anything, you know, my gosh. I mean, you're gorgeous, you're smart. Everybody loved him.
But Zach has his eye on one special person. Addie Hall works the shift after Zach.
Addie is very different from Zach, I think, in like just about every way. With him in the military and her just sort of this free-spirited, hippie, traveler kind of person. She's a dancer, she's a painter, she writes in poetry. She felt that he was too much of a people pleaser.
Zach would do the bar tricks and the bar jokes. And Addie just thought they were cheesy.
Like Zach, Addie has come to the Big Easy to start a new life.
Addie was kind and creative and funny and engaging. She was extraordinarily intelligent and literate. She was also a seamstress costume maker. She had won awards as a dance instructor.
Zach is captivated from the get-go.
Zach saw in her this sort of bohemian character who he believed was like the French Quarter ideal, and immediately started pursuing her. She's not interested in him really at all. She's looking at this guy, you know, ex-military guy, and just thinking, this is not her type of person.
In his mind, he was like, I'm gonna win her over. I can do this. I'm charming. I'm good looking. I got this. So he just kept being nice to her and smiling. And then there was an evening where he stayed after her shift. And they had some shots of Jägermeister. And after that, I believe it became something more.
I don't know how many.
She gave her friends the sense that they were very close, that they were sharing a lot, and that she was hearing some very profound moments of his life.
Zach told me that he had met the love of his life, his soulmate. I could tell he was just smitten with her.
I hadn't seen Addie for about 3 weeks, and I heard her yell out, "Cabs!"
What's up?
And I stopped, and I saw her with this big, huge grin on her face. That's when I met Zach. I met him a week before Katrina. She was happy, like really, really happy.
There is another side to Zach that Addie knows nothing about.
Zach has this whole other life. Zach's friends had no idea he was married or that he has children.
As Zach and Addie's relationship grows, a massive hurricane is brewing out in the Gulf. And it's headed straight for New Orleans. The monster storm will change everyone's lives. As Hurricane Katrina gathers strength out in the Gulf, a different kind of storm is threatening Zach and Addie.
Addie was unhappy when she found out about Zach's life and children. But she decides to stay with him because she absolutely loved him.
Although Zach and ex-wife Lana are separated, with the massive hurricane on its way, she wants him home.
All the businesses had closed, and everyone who was going to get out had done so. But I had no vehicle. I had two very young children, and I didn't know what to do. I was scared to death. So I called Zach, and I said, "This hurricane, it looks like a monster. I don't know what to do. I have the kids. I'm worried." He said that he had chosen to stay with Addie during the hurricane.
Stay with Addie?
I didn't understand why he wouldn't want to be there during the hurricane with his children.
Addie was just falling apart. She just got hysterical over the storm coming in and was very afraid and did not want Zach to go back to Lana. So when the hurricane hit, he wanted to stay with Addie, and Lana was livid.
Zach and Addie hunkered down in Addie's apartment in the French Quarter. They refused to heed a mandatory evacuation order. They felt like, "We're tough, we can ride this out."
I was listening to the television about what was coming towards New Orleans. I had a very deep sinking feeling. I don't think I'd ever experienced that sense of mortality.
When Katrina makes landfall, New Orleans is battered with terrifying force.
The first gust of wind over 150 miles went past the house. It is almost indescribable, the sound of that wind. The closest thing I can put to it would be a freight train rushing past with a choir of screams, unimaginably loud and unimaginably powerful and frightening. If that wind comes in the house and takes your roof off, that's when you die.
In the aftermath, the Big Easy lies in ruins. 80% of the city is underwater. 200,000 houses are destroyed. 1,800 people are dead. And Zach and Addie have gone off the radar.
It was awful. It was so dead quiet everywhere. You could hear like random screams or random gunshots. It was like the apocalypse or something.
I was really worried. I did not hear from Zach. What's happened to him? Is he lying underneath 6 feet of water? Is he dead? You don't know.
My phone calls were going unanswered, and I couldn't get in touch with him. I was terrified that my children had lost their father.
Miraculously, Zach and Addie have survived unscathed. Holed up in their French Quarter apartment, surrounded by devastation, their love grows stronger.
They had that space to just be with each other and
being alive.
Create their relationship to be perfect for each other.
After the storm, it's love. It's just them. Helping other folks in the French Quarter clean up downed trees, or cooking on the street, throwing these little parties in the streets.
They became a very, very tight-knit group of survivors. The sense of huddling around the light and warmth while everything else out there is in complete darkness. It created a sense of family.
Zach is so caught up in his romantic adventure, he forgets he has a family worrying about him.
It was a very, very, very exciting time for Zach and Addie. No authority figures, no bills, just them. Falling in love amidst the ruins of New Orleans, having sex in the middle of the street.
I searched Zach for weeks. I was terrified that he must be dead because there's no other reason I could think of that he wouldn't contact me to see how the children were.
You didn't have a cell phone I could borrow?
Finally, a TV crew came in and Zach got to use their cell phone.
Hey, Mom.
It was thrilling when I heard his voice. My mom was there too, and we both cried for joy. We did. He said he was fine. He was having a good time. He says, "That's really cool, Mom. They've taken pictures of us." They were like the wow socialites of the French Quarter. They were very popular because they went out of their way to make sure everybody was okay and help everybody along. So it gave me a good, warm, fuzzy feeling.
In New Orleans, they were seen as like plucky couple in the French Quarter. And they stayed and thrived in the wake of Katrina. And I think people are kind of heartened by that here.
They had a blast. They enjoyed their notoriety, their fame, their pictures in the New York Times.
There was no communication at that point. We had no idea if he was okay or not. It was horrible. This is a man I loved. My phone calls were still going unanswered. So I went onto the Red Cross website, put his name in. The pictures I saw, he was barbecuing and having some drinks. Everybody else was trying to rebuild the city and hoping it would get back. They were hoping it would stay the same.
Zach and Addie fell in love during that time of chaos, when they could create a world which had only room for the two of them. When normality returned to the city, it started to encroach upon the life that they created together.
I think the electricity came on and they probably went, oh crap, here it comes. Here comes life back at us again.
Zach contacted me a month after Katrina.
About time.
Of course I was angry. I'm barely making it. My job was not paying the bills. And I'm gonna need some help.
We need to talk. It's time for you to step up.
We agreed to meet at a bar in the French Quarter. He said he was sorry and he had made some mistakes. We decided that he would have the kids every other weekend.
Addie is jealous that Zach's ex-wife is calling the shots.
When real life started happening, that's when everything started to fall apart.
Zach and Addie's desperation to escape normal life will end up destroying them. Normality returns to New Orleans after the hurricane. The party is over for Zach and Addie.
They're very resentful that the time that they had just had, which is no work, the time of them being the center of attention, was really and truly over.
Broke, Zach and Addie go back to work. Zach in a grocery store, Addie in a bar.
She's a real good bartender. She knew how to bring customers in because she was a pretty lady. She was a pretty young lady. And she can fix drinks well. She was like a daughter. That's what I used to call her, my daughter, and she used to call me her mama.
Once things started to normalize in this city, that's when the fight started. That's when things got crazy. They were holding on to something, to being those outlaws and living on the edge of society, but society came back. That's when the drugs started.
Before Katrina, Zach and Addie had been casual drug users. Right after Katrina, they were drinking a lot and they got into the drugs. They were looking for the high that they had. And they weren't gonna get it.
Almost night.
The drinking and the drugs led to the degradation of their relationship. When they started having problems, they would use more and drink more.
Zach's spiraling out of control. His demons are coming back to haunt him.
Zach's military experiences, he never got over. One of his best friends, a bomb went off in the car and he killed her. Made friends with an Iraqi boy. The insurgents found out about it and massacred the whole family. Zach just never got over that. He never got over it.
I think he was extremely depressed. Absolutely think Zach had PTSD.
but he never let any of us know anything was wrong. Like I said, he always smiled.
The alcohol and drugs unleash a storm of emotions in Zach. He becomes insanely jealous of Addie.
Addie was a party girl. She loved to dance. She would get on the bar and she would dance. And she would entertain a customer. Customers loved Addie. Zach would go off the deep end on Addie, thinking a customer is looking at her, flirting with her or something. She loved Zach.
Move around, bro.
But he was very jealous. And I used to tell him, this is a business. You know, she has to make tips and she has to make customers happy. That was her living.
Zach doesn't see it that way. The drink and drugs only make him more angry.
Maybe to get back at Addie, Zach started to sneak out on her, going for little one-night stands and stuff.
Addie said that she was going to leave him. She was tired of him being jealous.
One night, they're playing these drinking games. And they get into kind of an epic fight.
It's the first time Zach hits her. It won't be the last.
The next morning, Zach tells friends, I'm done with New Orleans. I'm done with Addie. Zach purchased an Amtrak ticket to Washington State, thousands of miles away.
The next morning, Addie finds a note. Zach has left town for good.
The next day after, I asked her, I said, where the bruises come from then? She said, from Zach, he hit me. She told me they had been fighting. When they drank too much, they were fighting.
Let me see.
When that first major breakup, they were, that pain of distance, and not having that other part of you is pretty awful.
He's phoning up friends back here, saying, you know, I think I'm wrong. I'm not finished with New Orleans.
I don't think I'm done with Addie either.
Look, there's someone here I think you need to talk to, okay? Hold on a sec.
They were constantly on the phone together. It was necessary for them to be back together.
After a couple of weeks apart, Zach returns to New Orleans and Addie. A fatal mistake.
After 2 days of them being together again, they start using the same amounts of drugs, drinks, as before.
The drinking and drugging obviously makes the fights worse and worse. They started losing friends.
Him and Addie were breaking up all the time. It wasn't just argument, it was saying horrible things to each other and doing nasty stuff to each other.
One day, she locked him out of the house, and he was banging on the door, but yelling, let me in, let me in.
Open up, quick.
A neighbor called the cops, and the cops took him to jail. In point, it was almost as if they were breaking up, getting back together every 24 hours.
He told me, if I can't help you, nobody else will. That's nothing but graveyard love. And that's what he told her.
It's a dangerous obsession. They can't be together, and they can't be apart. Now Zach's cheating takes an unexpected turn.
Zach had described himself as bisexual. And now he actually has a relationship with a man.
Addie feels insulted. She cannot accept Zach's bisexuality.
Addie is
homophobic. So Zach's infidelity and possible homosexuality. She didn't like that.
Zach's gay affair is the ultimate betrayal. Addie wants revenge. And an opportunity soon comes her way. Zach and Addie are in freefall. She won't forgive his infidelity and wants out of the relationship.
Addie has a dispute with the landlord. So she and Zach find their new apartment. Zach was actually doing well financially at that point. He was working nonstop, delivering groceries, getting big tips. So he supplied the deposit for the small studio apartment for rent above a voodoo shop. Addie talks to the landlord and says, I want to drop a lease. But she asked for it to be drawn up in her name. Zach then finds out about it. Zach calls the landlord and says, I'm screwed. Addie's kicking me out.
She put herself in the lease so she could boot me out of the apartment.
Addie was throwing things out the door.
Zach, seriously.
And cussing and making a scene.
You're a piece of crap.
And yelling things that are humiliating to Zach. She had yelled out that he was having sex with other men and that he was gay. Anything and everything that she could that would be insulting, hurtful. He just wanted her to shut up.
Shut up!
Just drop it. Stop. After Zach strangles Addie, he's horrified at what he's done. I think there was some contemplation about, do I run? What do I do?
Instead, he stays put. In a macabre twist, Zach opens Addie's journal and starts to write.
It begins as a kind of clear, blow-by-blow account of what happened. We fought over the apartment. She tried to kick me out. We argued. She wouldn't shut up. I strangled her. I killed her. He then writes in his note that he violated the corpse. And there is this odd account of necrophilia that is just inexplicably strange. It was a combination of rage and lust. He even wrote, I still love her, despite how angry he was at her. He's doing a lot of cocaine at the time.
I had been calling Addie. No, Addie. It was strange for her not to call me back. I haven't seen Addie in some days, and she haven't answered the phone.
In the New Orleans heat, Addie's body begins to decompose. Even in his drug haze, Zach knows he needs to do something, and fast.
So he set the temperature in the apartment to like very, very cold. And then he put the corpse in a bathtub. He writes in the journal, you know, the question was now how to dispose of the corpse. Zach then calls a number of friends.
No, Addie skipped town.
She went back to North Carolina. She's done. I'm gonna take a vacation.
Zach did not turn up for work for about 2 or 3 days. And he was unreachable. The third day when I saw him, he looked awful. Unshaven, like he'd been on a serious bender. And he said, she left me again, and she went off to North Carolina. And my first thought was, oh, she's dead. And then I dismissed that. I thought it's possible. It was in Addie's nature to just drop everything.
With Addie's corpse decomposing in the apartment, Zach spends the next 2 weeks in a frenzy of sex, drugs, and alcoholic excess.
Hello?
Zach called me late at night and says he wants to party with me. I thought he was drunk.
You're out of your mind. Where's Addie?
And he said, she drove me crazy and I drove her out of town. I said, what does that mean? He said, she's back home. I said, okay, well, still not coming out. That was the last time I heard from him. And I think he was saying goodbye to me when he called. Maybe he was gonna tell me what he did, I don't know.
I did not hear from Zach for weeks. I'm just, you know, what's happened to him? And Lana, she didn't know what was going on.
There was some strong kind of psychosis happening. Zach made a number of burns on his body. He made one burn for every year of his life, which was 28 burns in all.
He disappeared. He wasn't answering calls, didn't come to work. And I was extraordinarily worried about him. So I called and I left him a message. And an hour later, he called me back and said, tonight we're going out, it's on me. He got a very big bag of cocaine, and then we went to the strip club, and he seemed fine, back to his jovial persona. Bought me lap dances and drinks.
In Addie's diary, Zach charts his descent into madness.
He writes messages on the wall in spray paint. He chronicled his list of failures: friends, jobs, military, marriage, and love. And he believes he had failed at all of those things.
Twelve days after killing Addie, Zach heads to a rooftop bar in the French Quarter. He orders a couple of drinks.
Zach is taking his drink and wandering back and forth on the rooftop bar. The bartender's concerned that he's not going to settle the tab. And then disappears completely.
It's unusual for somebody to jump to their death off of a roof of a building. When people commit suicide, that's not a normal method. So we thought maybe there might be something more to it.
Zach's note confirms their suspicion.
Started reading the note. It said, I had to take my life for the life I took. There's obviously another murder scene that we have to get down to the bottom of what's going on.
The note leads Detective Marovic to the apartment above the Voodoo Temple, where Addie died. What he finds inside is worse than anything he could have imagined. A note in Zach's pocket leads Detective Marovic to the apartment where Zach killed Addie.
Spray paint on the walls said, I'm such a loser. Please help me stop the pain. Please call my wife.
I got a phone call asking if this was Lana Bowen.
Yes.
He said, this is the coroner. Zach is dead, and he killed Addie. And I just didn't understand. I kept thinking there was a car accident.
In at the kitchen, with an arrow spray painted down to the oven, it said, look, I have no idea what I'm about to see, but it's definitely gonna be gruesome.
My friend was on the phone. She said, it's been on TV all morning, probably half the night. They're saying he did really horrible stuff. So what kind of stuff? She said she wasn't gonna tell me any more right now, but not to turn on the TV.
Opening the lid up on the first pot, there was a human head. The skin and the hair actually was peeling back from the skull. It had been cooked. I set down the lid real quick and I kind of was thinking to myself, did I really just see that? In another pot there was hands and feet. That also was cooked down. I opened the oven door and there was a large disposable turkey pan. Both legs were in the pan and it appeared to have been cooked. I was just in total shock. Those images were, they were burned in my head. I really didn't want to actually go through looking anymore, but I mean, I had no choice. Inside the refrigerator was a large black garbage bag. It contained the torso of his victim.
I didn't know what to do. I called Lori, and of course was hysterical. And I said, Zach's dead, and so is Addie, and I don't know what happened. She started crying and screaming.
I cried and cried and cried for 2 years. I think about him every day. I think about what I could have done as a mother to have prevented that. It doesn't make any sense. The story doesn't. You have this, you know, great kid who everybody loves, and then this thing happens.
We discovered in a journal that he wrote that he was trying to figure out a way of disposing the body piece by piece. He decided to cook them down so that it wouldn't smell. It's definitely one of the most disturbing scenes I've been on, if not the most disturbing.
There is no evidence Zach ate any of Addie's remains. But the extraordinary horror of his crime rocks New Orleans and those who were closest to him.
He had to be insane. He had to be insane. That's what something an insane person would do.
I think the losses that he suffered in Iraq were extraordinary for him. Whether it's losses of friends, loss of career, his marriage is done. And I think he was just, you know, extremely depressed, traumatized.
This couldn't describe the scene we saw and understand the amount of rage he had inside him to do that to a person that he claimed he loved.
It's a story of true love gone utterly wrong. A tragic love story.
I think that Zach bottled everything up inside about his failures. I think that drugs intensified that emotion, and I think that he started becoming a ticking time bomb. And with Addie, he finally met somebody who could strike that match and set off that bomb.